Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today is a recipient of the Bronze Star and the Purple Heart. 94-year-old Rex Rainey of Grand Junction, Colorado, spent 511 days in combat with the 45th Infantry Division in World War II. In early June of 1944, just days before that massive invasion at Normandy, you Thunderbirds in the 45th were there as the Allies took control of Rome. What do you remember about that?
Well, we went by Rome for about 6 miles, and then we stopped. We were starting to get replacements, and since our company commander let me have his Jeep whenever I wanted it, unless he had a use for it, why, his driver and first sergeant and I went into Rome a couple of times, rightfully or wrongfully, Vatican City Church, St. Petersburg.
St. Peter's, yeah.
We were told by a guard we couldn't get in there, and I'm not proud of GIs, but you rack back a bolt on a 45, and even the Vatican guard understands he can come in. And so the three of us fisted it, and he showed us all around, shaking all the time. And when we went to looking at that ceiling, which is beautiful, he was praying, I think, for him, don't shoot. We saw what we wanted, so we left.
Mm-hmm.
And we did drive by some of the old ruins, but that was, we'd been to Rome. There was some Italians voluntarily joined our outfit and fought alongside us.
Were you starting to get the sense that momentum was on your side and that this wasn't going to take too much longer?
No. Berlin was a long ways away.
Yeah.
From above Rome, then we went back to Naples and boarded ships and went to southern France for the invasion of southern France.
So here's another invasion that you guys are making.
Yes.
And what was that one like?
That was the best one we had ever made.
The cleanest?
And we lost no men on it. We had lost one boat in Sicily. We didn't lose any at Salerno, but we went in and to an old farm kid, southern France was beautiful country.
I bet.
We didn't hit too much opposition for the most part, and so to speak, it was a paradise.
Well, and in a matter of months, you would see the opposite of paradise. And I'm curious, this whole time that you're fighting over there in Europe, had you heard anything about concentration camps, about Hitler's persecution of the Jews, or how he was treating other political prisoners?
We had heard things about them, but it was hearsay. There was a lot of stuff went on before we got to Munich. Somehow you've got some things coming back that have been dormant for a long time. There was a place called Aschaffenburg that our orders were to bypass it on the right. We were getting pretty well by it, our unit was, when suddenly we got under fire and we were pinned down for 5 days. Later to find out that there was a handful of SS troops there and his women and children under orders to fire or be killed. That held us up. And that town wasn't marred because it was reported no activity.
Huh.
It was leveled before we left there.
Wow.
I've always felt sorry for those people. And then there was a place on down, Rambervillers, that we were going along, and I'd gotten orders to move the CP up X number of blocks. We were 2 blocks behind where the line was. 3 of us were up there, a Jeep driver, myself, and a person from the intelligence section. And we never got a wire. We didn't have a radio. So we sat there, and we sat there. Then we got up the second morning, and here's a German 88 sitting 3 blocks away. So I told him to make sure and don't pull covers off the windows. Don't go outside today. And that night I told him I'll take first watch because, with all respect to the one from intelligence, the only way I could explain was he was a nervous Nelly. If he'd seen that tank, he'd have started firing. And the Jeep driver, he's a close friend, but he'd have said, let's go to the Jeep and make a run. And I hiked back the 8 or 10 blocks and ran into a guard, and thank goodness he recognized me when I spoke. He said, we're jumping off tomorrow morning and going to retake the town. That we pull back because one flank was all open and they were coming in behind us, and that had been filled in. Then there was a place called Reapersweiler that we lost our reinforced 2nd Battalion. Someone wasn't as sharp as they were supposed to have been.
But you brought those up because those are some close calls for you. Any one of those things going the other way, if you had gone with the intelligence officer's idea or your Jeep driver, you might not be here.
That's right. Yeah. And we were someplace in Germany when that CEO's Jeep came wheeling in, hollering for me. And so I asked him what he wanted, and he said, well, Captain thought you might want to go to the car. One platoon of Charlie Company had just entered it. They'd gone in across the railroad tracks on the back way. Well, I guess it was Easy Company from 2nd Battalion took it officially from the front.
And so this is near Munich, the Dachau concentration camp.
Yes.
They ask you if you want to go.
And the company commander thought that I might want to go, so I hollered at the first sergeant and asked if he wanted to see it, and he said yes, so we piled in the Jeep, and a few miles down the road, a bunch of railroad cars, and we first looked at them, and there were bodies in stock cars and in the gondolas and along the tracks and between them and hanging out of them. And it's something you never expected to see. We didn't like what we saw. They had the crematorium, the big gas furnace going, and there was bodies piled up like cordwood that they had been, I guess, thrown in. We were about an hour after the camp was entered before we got in there. I don't think we had an hour before we was ready to go back. And then from then on, it was a simple march into Munich, and
right,
the war was over.
Did you see any of the survivors of
the
camp?
Oh, yes. Yes, they would come and try to claw on you, get you to take them out. But they were walking skin and bones. I didn't see near all of them, but yes, I saw probably, I don't know, 50 or 100.
You saw enough to get a feel for what had happened there and what kind of
too much
cruelty people were capable of. I don't want to make you dwell on it, but anytime I meet someone like you who was there, and I think I mentioned to you, my grandfather was at Buchenwald when it was liberated. It's not just a straw dog. There actually are people in this world that don't think that happened, that think it was all made up. And you were there. You saw it.
I'd hate to tell you how many people were dead or dying in stock cars, in gondolas. Some of them were half in and half out of a train, couldn't move anymore. You can't imagine. I can't imagine what it was like, really. And I spent about an hour there.
Yeah. And did, maybe not in the moment, but eventually did that experience and your coming face to face with that give you maybe even a new understanding or appreciation for how important the work that you'd been doing over there was?
It made you do a little thinking. It made you willing to travel to Denver when that Colonel Sparks arranged for a marker in remembrance of the Holocaust to be placed. But yes, I thought it was worth a trip from Delta to Denver to pay respect for something being put up for them. I just happened to think of the Second Battle of the Bulge, and we were in Alsace at the time. We didn't suffer many actual KIAs, but we had a lot of injured from tree bursts. We had never encountered tree bursts before, and snow's on the ground. You don't dig foxholes very well. Our artillery was out of ammunition, and we could see 7 tanks coming, and suddenly everything stopped. Thank God they ran out of gasoline. They were out of gasoline out down here, for once they were down low. We were up high. We were out of artillery shells. They were out of gasoline.
If they had had 5 more minutes of gas?
It would have taken them at least that much or a little longer. If they had had 20 minutes more gas, there would have been something else.
You guys would have been wiped out.
A good chance.
You keep giving me examples of somebody looking out for you.
No question about it.
And I come back to when I asked you about going overseas, and you said, didn't really think you'd be coming back. When you did come back, what was that like for you to see America again after 500 days at war?
It was a while. If you would believe this, on my way from Munich, they'd told me that I'd be taken to Le Havre and flown back to the States for a 45-day leave.
Uh-huh.
Then some brass preempted, and so enlisted men got in 40 and A cars and headed to Marseille. And I came down with malaria on the way to Marseille. So I spent 11 days in the hospital in Marseille before I got on board ship. I don't remember the voyage. I don't remember coming into Patrick Henry. I don't remember a train ride. I remember coming to in Denver at the Federal Center. Got my discharge at a little after 11 that night, and I went down to Denver, went into a store and bought a suit, left all my army outfit in there and wore a suit and shirt and tie out.
How long was it till you made it back to the farm and saw your folks?
I caught a train out the next morning.
What was that reunion like?
It was good. They had no idea. I was in the States even. I don't know if someone had called them, and they met me in town.
A moment you never thought was going to happen.
For a long time, I didn't think it would, but it all worked out.
Amen. And it worked out that you met a young lady in Delta?
Right.
Named Betty? You guys are heading toward your 67th anniversary?
Right. Never did get to be an electrical engineer. When I got out, I wanted no part of that. I was going to go into business, so I took a business training, but my accounting professor talked me into going out to teach instead of pursuing business.
Because you went to teach in Delta, you met Betty. What was it that caught your eye?
I don't know. There was a good-looking secretary there, but I hadn't thought about it, and the Letterman's Club, what they call the D Club, invited me as a guest to their spring banquet, and I was supposed to bring someone. I thought about a faculty member or two, but I couldn't see that. And then I thought, well, there's someone in the front office. That doesn't look bad. She agreed to go with me. It was her downfall.
The rest is history. You must be doing something right if you're getting close to your 67th anniversary. People ever asked you for that advice? What's the secret to a marriage that lasts that long?
Don't disagree too seriously with your wife, but don't agree to everything the first time.
I do want to say, before I forget, thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for going back there with us.
It took a while to get things to fall in mind.
I guess the last question I have for you, when you think back over all this, I mean, you're going to be 95 in August. You're in combat for 500 days. You're wounded. You saw a concentration camp in person. All these experiences, a career in education as a teacher, as a principal, as a school district administrator. When you think back, what are you most proud of? What are you most thankful for?
The Delta Letterman's Club.
Because if they didn't invite you to that function, you and Betty would have never gotten together. I'm just looking at your eyes. Looks like you can't imagine a life without her.
It's been pleasant.
And that's just one of the ways to describe this unforgettable hour we've spent with Rex Rainey. Hard to fathom everything he went through. I don't know about you, but it left me as sure as ever of those four words with which we close each episode of Hometown Heroes. We'll do that right now as I thank you for listening, trusting you'll remember that freedom is not free.